Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 2nd of November, a National Day of Climate Action scheduled in locations all over the country tomorrow, part of the nationwide Step It Up 2007 actions. It's a call for national leaders to step it up and show leadership to curb global warming. And our conversation today is about that very issue. There's going to be a rally at Lapham Peak State Park in Delafield tomorrow with local and regional speakers and people from the scientific activist and religious communities. They will be circulating a petition to the president, to senators and representatives, asking them to show real leadership on the issue of global warming and to take on these issues: a moratorium on new coal-fired power plants, freezing climate pollution levels now and cutting at least 30% by 2020 and 80% by 2050, and 5 million new green jobs, conserving 20% of our energy by 2015. We'll be talking about Step It Up and climate, global warming and climate action this hour of our program today. And we have two guests with us. One is no stranger to Wisconsin Public Radio, Ed Garvey, who's an attorney with Garvey, McNeil and McGillivray in Madison, a frequent guest on Joy's show on Fridays. He's a progressive. He was the Democratic Party nominee for governor. He played an important role, these are his environmental credentials, some of them, in supporting the development of the Wisconsin Public Intervenors Office as an environmental watchdog in the Wisconsin Department of Justice. He writes great blogs on fightingbob.com and organizes the Fighting Bob Fest. Ed Garvey, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Kathleen. I think I'll just hang up now.
Yeah, no. We need you for an hour.
That was very good.
Thanks. Also joining us is Professor George Stone, natural sciences instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. He has written several books, and he teaches courses at MATC on climate change fundamentals, on weather fundamentals, energy and nature, technology and society. This is interesting. He won a grant proposal to support purchase of photovoltaic panels and a wind turbine to collect sun and wind energy for Renewable Energy Technology Center at the Mequon campus of MATC, which is a pretty neat thing. Professor Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen, and good morning, Ed.
Hey, good morning.
When you look at all of these issues, Ed Garvey, is this the most important issue on the planet right now?
I think it is. You know, Betty and I went to see Inconvenient Truth, and we came out into the lobby with a very silent audience, and suddenly people started talking about it. And I think what Bill McKibben is trying to do here with Step It Up 2007 is to take the mantle from Al Gore and our own Gaylord Nelson, and to say, you know, we have to go beyond Earth Day, and we have to go beyond just the discussion, and we have to step it up and pass some legislation. I sort of see this train coming down the tracks, and there's a child on the tracks, and people who are denying global warming are saying, well, that's not really a train, but if it is, the child will probably be saved by someone else. I think it's going to have to be us.
George, what evidence are we seeing right now? I mean, we're seeing fires and droughts, and it seems to me as though it may be evidence of global warming. Is it or isn't it?
Well, it is, Kathleen. There have been a number of studies that show that the fires, the wildfires in the western part of the United States in the last decade, have really increased dramatically, not only in their intensity, but in their frequency. And that's been related directly to summer after summer of record-breaking heat waves, prolonged droughts, which makes the trees more vulnerable and the brush and all the fuel elements much more vulnerable to wildfires. Of course, we're seeing the worst drought in recorded history in the southeastern part of the United States, especially in North Georgia and in the Carolinas. Atlanta's about to run out of water, something that is unexpected. There are many impacts in Wisconsin. In the central and northern part of the state, we've seen more than a decade now of extraordinarily mild winters, which has hurt the winter tourism and the winter sports industry up there. The lakes are thawing out earlier in the spring, freezing up later in the fall. Lake Superior is at a record low level because of increased evaporation due to a shorter ice cover period. Lake Superior is also at a record warm temperature. There are impacts, not to mention the Arctic and many places around the world. So there are just a manifold impacts of global warming, which are getting more and more serious right now.
Yeah. Let's look at the political side of this for a moment, Ed. We know that if Al Gore decided to enter the race, which he's probably not, we would have a true leader on this particular topic. It seems to me as though we need somebody to put this issue front and center, and I'm not sure we have that person, do we?
Well, I think to some extent we do, and Bill McKibben, you know, he has really grabbed hold of this issue, and you know, he's asking us to start a movement similar to the civil rights movement, because you know this is really the issue, as you pointed out. I mean, I have grandchildren, you know, and I think I have to really be looking at them, saying, "I'm not sure that you're going to have much of a world to grow up in, or to raise your children in." And somebody has to start asking this legislature and the Congress, "When are you going to wake up?"
Mm.
I mean, instead of doing something to stop all coal-burning plants from being constructed, they give them tax breaks to let them be built.
Mm-hmm. Why, George? Why do we do that? Why aren't we front and center on this issue?
Well, you know, it's the whole structure of our political system. Money has much too great an influence. The big corporations, especially the energy companies, have a tremendous influence in the current administration, and I think that's a major factor. The lobbying money that is spent to prevent conversion away from fossil fuels, which is what we absolutely have to do with utmost speed and as soon as possible, the propaganda and the money spent to prevent that is enormous, and I think that's a major factor. And reform of our campaign finance system, our public finance, we need public financing of our political campaigns, and we need to stem the flow of all this private money, which is driving the resistance to this, what I call the major historic transition in human history, a major change away from dependence on fossil fuels to alternative sources of energy. This is a major transition in the history of humankind, and we need leadership from every quarter. And I'd like to add that James Hansen, Dr. James Hansen of NASA at the Goddard Institute for Space Studies at Columbia University, has been a leader in the scientific community, and he and his colleagues are the guys that provide all the data which alarm people like Bill McKibben and give them the impetus for leadership. He deserves tremendous credit, and he first testified before Congress in 1988 after the hottest year on record at that time, which incidentally isn't even in the top 10 right now. So let's give credit to the scientific community, which is giving us the hard science and the hard facts, which tell us what's happening to our planet.
Right. Ed, you mentioned Bill McKibben being a leader on this, and what about the people who are running for president? What about Rudy Giuliani and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and all of those people? It seems, you know, you hear some mention of global warming, but nobody is really on this issue.
Yeah. No, and you look at, for example, as Professor was just saying, the fact that Atlanta may run out of water in 3 or 4 months. Yesterday, it was reported that a town in Tennessee did run out of water.
Right.
I'm just wondering what happens if 5 million people in the Atlanta area no longer have water. They're going to be looking at the Great Lakes and saying, aha, let's put a pipe in there, as Bill Richardson suggested they do that for the Southwest. Here we have record lows for the Great Lakes. We have Murphy Oil that's now proposing to build a huge new plant for oil sands up in Lake Superior. And what we have are politicians who say, well, if they'll create a couple hundred jobs, we'll give them anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop looking at these short-term jobs and looking at long-term impact on the Great Lakes as well as the rest of the environment.
Yeah.
Those Athabasca tar sands up in Alberta in Canada, that's the absolute opposite direction to the one we should be going. It's one of the it's the dirtiest source of fuel we could possibly extract. We can have plenty of new jobs by going into emerging energy technologies, such as renewables, and we have a great opportunity in Wisconsin to develop those industries. There's no reason in the world that we couldn't have a great research center for photovoltaic energy and for solar thermal energy right in the greater Milwaukee area, such as at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. There's no reason that we couldn't have new plants producing the solar panels, the photovoltaic panels that are in increasing demand all the way around the world, or the solar thermal equipment. Johnson Controls, the largest corporation in our state, has just undertaken a new initiative in renewable energy, hired 20 new people, and they're focusing on solar thermal energy. There are tremendous new opportunities for jobs in renewables and emerging energy technologies. We don't have to go to the old fossil fuel industry for jobs.
But you hit it earlier. The fact is that those who are pushing that line about jobs are the ones who have the money to lobby the legislature and to put money into campaign coffers.
That's right. That's the corrupting influence.
Yeah. Well, at the risk of being alarmist about this, let me be alarmist about this.
No,
Please do. Yeah,
yeah, right. Well, when you talk about Atlanta running out of water and the wildfires, the horrible fires, all these people's lives are being affected. Ed, you mentioned your children and your grandchildren not having much of a world here. This is alarming, and I'm wondering from both of you when we simply must act on these issues. Or a lot of people aren't going to have water. We're going to have a lot more fires, and we're not going to have much of a planet left. That's alarming, but that's what we're hearing.
I'll give you the political science view, and then we'll get the real science.
Okay.
I think it may be too late already. I mean, those are the kinds of comments I hear, but certainly we have to start now. I mean, just imagine, we were talking last night, we were in Vairoka with a group that's trying to protect themselves from big hog farms that they want to bring into the area. And somebody said, well, just imagine what would happen if 5 million people lose their water. They're going to look at the Great Lakes and say, boy, this is ours.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature still can't even pass the compact that was negotiated among the various states along the Great Lakes as well as Canada. So, you know, it seems to me that the reason we're having this rally tomorrow is to say, step it up, folks. We've got to do something and do it now.
Yeah, I think I really dislike the term alarmist. You know, that's a pejorative term. It's used by people who are opposing something.
Right.
What it is, it's real. It's reality. We face the greatest. I went to a congress in Australia in August. It's called the International Quaternary Association. They have a congress every 4 years, and one of the keynote speakers, Peter Barrett from New Zealand, he said we are facing the second greatest conversion or shift in climate transition in the Cenozoic era. Now, that means in the last 65 million years.
Mm.
His specialty is the geology, the climate of, I should say, of Antarctica. And these are scientists who know the world climate system, the global climate system, and they are warning us that we are facing a dramatic change. Now, you can't connect global warming with any specific event, such as the drought in the southeast or a specific wildfire out west. But you can make general statements. The computer models, the climate models all show this, that we're going to see more extreme weather events. We're going to see shifts in the climatic belts that we have become used to, that we've constructed our entire agriculture and water supply system and population distribution in response to. We're going to see shifts in those. And we are seeing more extreme weather events. It's not a coincidence. Floods in the last half century are up dramatically worldwide. One of the reasons is that as the air temperature warms, that warms the sea surface temperature. And, of course, the oceans cover almost three-quarters of the planet. And as the ocean surface warms, that evaporates more moisture into the atmosphere. So there's more moisture there for precipitation, and there's also more energy carried by that water vapor for storms. So, yeah, we're in a serious situation. And geologists know that in the past, in the history of the Earth, there have been dramatic and sudden shifts in the climate. We don't know how it works exactly, but we know that it's happened before, and we're in danger of seeing it again.
Yeah.
It seems like every day I read the newspaper, there's something that people think, well, it moved much faster than we thought, whether it's the receding of the glaciers in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
or the melting of Greenland. I mean, you know, this thing could be getting out of control.
Exactly.
And that's why I don't think we have the time to sort of sit around and say, well, is it real, or could you please prove it again, or whatever? I think it is real. Everybody is beginning to recognize that, and it's time for action.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right, Ed.
And I think that most people would agree with you on this. People are very concerned
too.
About this issue.
I do, too. I mean, I have to thank Al Gore. I mean, I've rarely
right.
in my life, I think really it's first or the greatest impact that any movie has ever had. On a nation that was pretty skeptical of the science that was being set forth. So, you know, I think people today tend to believe that it is a problem. Maybe it's just watching those fires burn in California or the floods or Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is, I think that we've passed the point where the American people are in doubt. They now want something to happen.
Right.
That's right. And that's the whole purpose of the Step It Up program. There's another nationwide program scheduled for January 31st, called Focus the Nation. And it's to mobilize college campuses and public schools, all educational institutions across the country, for the same purpose: to put pressure on the government at every level, municipal, county, state, federal, even international, to take strong and immediate action on this problem, because it's our kids, the people who are in school now, and their kids, they're going to really suffer major consequences in the future if we don't take major action now. Because otherwise we may pass certain tipping points and the climate shift right. can get out of our influence, out of our control altogether.
Well, George, let me ask you specifically about your project here, the purchase of photovoltaic panels and the wind turbine to collect sun and wind energy for this renewable energy technology center. We keep hearing that the technology is not quite up to par. We need to invest more money. We don't have it yet. We're working on it, but it's not there. But you've done it. Is the technology there? Is it cost prohibitive, or can we figure out a way to pay for this kind of renewable sources?
Well, you know, Kathleen, it's the supply and demand. And new technologies are always more expensive because the volume of sales is small. Look at the history of all of our electronic gadgets and equipment and how they have decreased in price. Television sets today are cheaper than they were 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing will happen with renewable energy.
It's such good programming.
It's emerging energy technologies. As we develop them, they're going to be marketplace competitive. But in the beginning, we need government incentives to get them started. And that's what's lacking right now. There's no government leadership, and not sufficient government leadership, even at the state level and at the local and county level. We need to support this. Now, what we did at Milwaukee Area Technical College has been done by a number of other technical colleges on our tech college system in Wisconsin, and is beginning to take place in the UW system and in many of the public school systems. But it's a small start.
Right.
Energy conservation, we also have a new new Center for Energy Conservation and Advanced Manufacturing at our Oak Creek campus at Milwaukee Area Technical College. And this is taking place all around the state. It's like the schools, our higher ed systems, are taking the leadership rather than the government, where it should be. And we've got to get going fast on this.
Well, when you think of how much money we spent on expanding our prison population, you start to ask yourself, what are we doing here? The amount of money that would be required to help develop these programs is minuscule compared to that.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't awake at the time, but when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was concerned about nuclear weapons getting into the hands of Adolf Hitler, they started the Manhattan Project, and they spent whatever they had to spend in order to develop our own program. Here, if you know, all you read about is how we feel about Turkey possibly invading Kurdistan. Or should we bomb Iran, or should we bomb Pakistan, or should we bomb Afghanistan some more? There's such a mixed-up set of priorities that it's staggering.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, Ed, you'd think there would at least be a call for a huge conservation movement. There's
right.
nothing like that.
And the PSC doesn't make those demands of the utilities. I mean, when we fought the transmission line from, you know, Canada down to Wausau, we said, you know, if you just force the utilities and the manufacturers of air conditioners and so on to increase the efficiency, you could get away without having to have that kind of transmission line that has, we used to call it the extension cord. But there isn't any pressure on that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just use it without any real pressure being put on the utilities to conform to what we think are the realities. And they're not doing what they should do, and that's just to ban the construction of any coal-burning plants.
We're going to welcome phone calls. I'm sure we'll have many this hour. We're talking about the National Day of Climate Action. It is titled the Step It Up 2007 campaign, and it's a call for all of us, and particularly for national leaders, to show leadership to curb global warming. There's going to be a rally at Lapham Peak State Park, Highway C in Delafield from 1 to 3 tomorrow, and it will feature local and regional speakers. They'll have a petition to the president and to the senators and representatives asking them to show real leadership on the issue of global warming. Ed Garvey is with us. He'll be one of the speakers tomorrow, attorney with Garvey, McNeil, and McGillivray in Madison, and a big-time social activist. George Stone is also with us, natural sciences instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College, a self-described nature freak who's written about global warming and teaches courses at MATC on climate change fundamentals, weather fundamentals, and energy in nature, technology, and society. Here's the phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. And you can always send us an email, and that address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about the National Day of Climate Action, Step It Up 2007. And let me ask you as well, how do you think, I know that many of you listening are very concerned about this issue, and how do you translate your concern into some action? What do you want leaders to do about this? Do you think leaders are listening? Do we need a national plan? Who's supposed to put together the national plan? Is it too late for a plan? Obviously, it needs to get going right now. So how do you translate your concern into action? 800-486-8655 is the number. Dan from White Lake. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
First a correction and then a point. Lake Superior is very doubtlessly being reduced in the water level. And by the way, I've sailed on the Great Lakes for 47 years, so I know whereof I speak. Evaporation couldn't begin to account for the level of Lake Superior. In fact, what has happened is back in the 90s, the Corps of Engineers dredged the shipping channel through Lake St. Clair, which connects Lake Huron and the Blue Water River with Lake Erie and the Detroit River. That channel was supposed to be dredged to a depth of 28 feet and then lined with rock. Because the water levels were coming up back then, they never lined the channel with rock. The channel has now eroded to a depth of 60 feet, and the water is running out there. That's what the depth of the and boats on Lake Erie, or excuse me, Lake Superior, that load up with coal and so forth for the last 10 or 12 years have been loading 10 or 15,000 tons light because of this lack of water in the lakes, and specifically in the St. Mary's River and Rock Cut, which happens to be one of the spots that was man-made when they put the 1,000-foot oar boats back on the lakes. So you're wrong about the evaporation being the cause of the decline in the water level.
Well, I'll
in Lake
respond
Superior.
To that, Dan.
Yeah, George, now, George, let's have a response to it. George, go ahead.
Well, I'm not wrong. Dan is correct about the dredging, but you see, that affects the level of Lake Michigan and Huron, which is actually one lake. And that lake has gone down. Scientific studies show that dredging is responsible probably for about two-thirds of the decline of the Lake Michigan-Huron level. About 20% of that decline is attributed to increased evaporation and global warming. Lake Superior is an entirely separate lake at a higher level and is not affected by that dredging in St. Croix, so I'll make that correction there. Lake Superior, let me say that a natural lake level is the result of an equilibrium or a balance between precipitation and inflow and evaporation and outflow. And a key factor in evaporation for northern lakes is the length of period of time that the lake is covered by ice, because the ice acts as a sealing cap and prevents evaporation. Now, in Lake Superior, like a great many northern lakes, and this can be verified by Professor John Magnuson from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who he and his colleagues made a great study of this, as the ice cover period shortens, and it has been dramatically in Lake Superior, the period of time during which the water is exposed and evaporates is increased. And that is attributed a significant part of the lowering lake level of Lake Superior, which, again, I emphasize, is a separate lake from Huron, Michigan, which is what Dan was talking about.
All right, Dan, thanks very much for the call. We go next to Scott from Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. When it comes to energy conservation and energy use, I'm just curious what your guests' opinion are. We tend to look to Europe for some strange reason as the model for all of our ills. I'm wondering why we don't use France's model, because they use a tremendous amount of nuclear energy for electricity. I think that's their number one source of electrical power is nuclear, and it just seems to be an option that's completely off the table in the United States.
Ed, what do you think of nuclear? Should it be on the table?
Well, it's very expensive, for one thing, and we don't know what we're going to do with the spent fuel, and therefore there still is a position by the state of Wisconsin that they cannot build a nuclear plant. unless they solve those problems. I mean, where do you put it? Yucca Mountain, or as they proposed at one point, somewhere near Wausau? I mean, this is the difficulty with nuclear power. It sounds good, but the problem with it is that it's extremely expensive and it's dangerous.
Yeah. What do we need to be moving ahead on full force right now, George? What's the alternative that's cost-effective and that we can put in place pretty quickly?
Well, we go for the low-hanging fruit. Let me give an overall general analysis.
All right.
About 40% of energy is used by buildings, and that's for heating primarily and air conditioning and operating equipment. About half of that could be saved by adopting sound conservation practices and monitoring the energy use, managing the energy use in buildings, so using more insulation and so forth. So that's probably the easiest thing. And the simplest example would be to change the lighting systems to lighting that uses a lot less energy. About 30% of our energy is used in transportation, and especially cars. And by raising the CAFE standards, the fuel efficiency standards for automobiles and for trucks, we can save, again, a tremendous amount of energy, maybe 50% just by having more efficient energies instead of getting 25 miles per gallon, 50 miles or higher. So those are things that we can do right away. As far as one of the tough ones is electric power generation. But we can start. Natural gas is a lot less polluting. It produces a lot less greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide, than coal. We need to, but then the marketplace on that is tricky. Renewable energy is a major way that we need to go in electric power generation. We need to put money into that in a major, major way. Germany is leading the world in the use of photovoltaic for electric power generation. They have photovoltaic panels on everything. For example, the sound barriers along the Autobahn are covered with photovoltaic panels generating electricity. So we can move in conservation, in all, changing to renewable energy, and in transportation, and save a tremendous amount of energy in a relatively short time. And I'm glad Ed mentioned the Manhattan Project, because that shows what this country can do when we focus the scientific and engineering and business genius of this country on a project. Another great example is the Apollo project in the 1960s. Well, after President Kennedy declared we were going to put people on the moon within the decade, we focused the great talent and ingenuity of this country on that project, and we did it.
And it really is a question of will.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to do it?
I mean,
last night I got 47.6 miles per gallon in my Prius driving over to Viroqua, and here we have Detroit fighting against better standards or higher standards for automobiles. You have to wonder if the lunatics are in charge of the asylum. I mean, if gas or oil rather is now over $96 a barrel, you know what's going to happen in the course of the next 5 or 6 months.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, why is it? And let me go to you on this, Ed. It was interesting to hear George talk about what's going on in Germany. Why does Germany do it? Why can't we do it? Why does Germany do it?
I think it's just leadership. I mean, people make decisions that they're going to take care of a problem, and they can, if they have a plan, they can at least make a head start on it. The problem we've had here is that George Bush and Dick Cheney and the people that he appoints to office don't believe in global warming, or say they don't, and so they say there's no crisis, so there's no need for a plan, there's no need to do anything. And you asked earlier if there are any presidential candidates who are really making this an issue. And the only one who said anything about it was Bill Richardson, and he wants to take our Great Lakes water to the southwest.
Right.
But I do think that the time is right for one of these candidates to say, listen, I am going to be the green president, and here's how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. So are you leading a draft Al Gore campaign, Ed?
No, but, I'm certainly watching, because it seems to me that these issues are going to have to be brought out. And I hope, whether he runs or not, I would like him to speak up more, because he does have that reputation now with the Nobel Peace Prize as well as the movie. So I think he should be speaking out more.
Yeah. Let's go to Milton from West Allis. Hi.
Good morning. I think we're really too late. We've gotten past the watershed point with the melting of the permafrost. Not only do we have huge amounts of carbon dioxide coming off, but we also have incredible amounts of methane coming off here, which has 20 times the greenhouse gas power of carbon dioxide. Also, the oceans are becoming more acidic.
That's right.
Which is also releasing quite a lot of carbon dioxide. The time to deal with this would have been 30 years ago when, you know, people like me were just labeled crackpots. Oh, you guys are just such nutballs saying stuff like this. And what we should be doing now is thinking about mitigation. We need to start building stronger houses. We need to start moving in from the coasts. We're not going to stop what's happening.
All right, Milton. George?
Well, Milton is right in the sense that what's happening now, the global warming that's occurring now, is due to the greenhouse gases that we released half a century or a century ago. There's a tremendous lag effect because of the enormous ability of the oceans to absorb heat, thermal inertia of the oceans. But we can't throw up our hands and say, because it's already happening and we can't stop that, that what we have to do is prevent catastrophic change in the future. Global warming is going to continue through this century, no matter what we do. What we have to do is mitigation, as Milton said. We have to slow down the acceleration of greenhouse gas addition to the atmosphere, then stabilize it, and then reduce it so that future generations will not face an entirely different planet. It's true that a lot's happened, and it's going to continue to happen. We can't change that. But what we can change is we can prevent catastrophic change in the future, and we've got to act quickly.
Thanks, Milton, for the call. An email from James from Salt Lake City. I want to ask your guests what their thoughts are about ethanol. He wanted nuclear power, too, but we've done that. So let's do ethanol. A lot of interest and attention paid to this energy source. Doesn't ethanol still add to the greenhouse effects? Ed?
Well, I have somewhat of a conflict since we have fought ethanol plants all over the state of Wisconsin, raising the question of whether it's going to help or hurt in the future. So I'll let George handle this one.
Okay. Well, no, Kathleen, actually ethanol does not add to the greenhouse effect because the carbon dioxide that's taken out of the air by the crops as they grow through photosynthesis, then when we burn the products, such as ethanol, of those crops, that carbon dioxide is returned, that carbon is returned to the atmosphere. So it's part of the surface cycle of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The problem with fossil fuels is that we're taking ancient carbon that's been sequestered in the earth for tens to hundreds of millions of years, and we're taking that ancient carbon out of the ground, doing time travel with it, releasing all the energy that was stored in it. And so you see, we're adding new carbon and carbon dioxide to the atmosphere that's not part of the natural surface cycle. And that's the real problem. If we could generate more energy from surface crops that are simply recycling the surface carbon dioxide, that doesn't add new greenhouse gas to the atmosphere. The problems with ethanol are more of an economic nature. And also, it's not particularly efficient because of the enormous amount of energy that has to go into producing it.
And you sure don't want it next to a school.
Sugarcane's a lot more efficient, such as in Brazil.
Yeah. Anton is next from Madison. Hi, Anton.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I want to respond to a few things. I don't mean to pitch an impossible question or idea, but I do mean to relay a little bit of dissatisfaction and wonderment in the fact that we seem to not incent nearly anything. You mentioned earlier, when are we going to have a time of real leadership? We seem to miss very important things that can affect a lot of people in a lot of beneficial ways. One I want to raise was looking at companies that have reduced emissions, but for reasons that weren't environmentally motivated. Look at UPS and FedEx. Two persons I remember speaking with in the operations groups there changed routes to include right turns only throughout the day in most major markets. This has amazingly improved their efficiency. They saved a gallon of fuel and 10 to 15 miles of travel each day. Now, that's a small amount per vehicle, right? But multiply this by few dozen vans for Madison, hundreds for big cities, times thousands of cities in the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a significant savings. They didn't get anything for it. Maybe they shouldn't have, but they got improved profits, lower costs. But why don't we do these sorts of things?
What do you want us to do?
As far as what I would love would be to actually look at everyone who owns a fleet of something. Who's a large consumer? Who owns trucking lines? Who does these things? Do they have an operations engineer? Do they understand root efficiency?
I see.
Do they rock these things?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, Ed.
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, what the caller is suggesting is that action be taken and it should be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
For heaven's sakes, we sure agree with him that the action should be taken. All of us have a responsibility. What's disturbing is that there doesn't seem to be anything coming from the DNR or the governor's office or the legislature that would say that Wisconsin is more concerned about greenhouse gases than it is about some temporary jobs that Murphy Oil and others might create.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Anton, very much for the call.
Job potential.
I'm sorry, George, we missed the first part of that. What was that?
Well, and as Ed said, they're not only talking about jobs such as for Murphy Oil or processing or transporting those oil from the Athabasca tar sands, but they're overlooking the fact that emerging energy technologies and renewables would provide an enormous amount of new employment. You know, transitions in technology don't shrink the economy as the alarmist energy companies would have us believe. Emerging technologies expand the economy.
Mm-hmm.
They always have. They always will. You know, the blacksmith said, don't buy those cars. They're unsafe and there aren't any roads for them. Stick with the horse. You know, it's the same old story. New technologies expand the economy, and we need to get some of those new technologies and that production and manufacturing right in Wisconsin.
Yeah, the buggy whip union wasn't too happy either.
Yeah, but maybe we should have stuck with the horse. What do you think? Maybe we've been better off now.
Yeah, that's another issue.
All right. Here's our phone number. We need to pause for a moment. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. We're talking about the Step It Up Day that will be taking place tomorrow in Wisconsin, and actually it's part of a National Day of Climate Action, a rally at Lapham Peak State Park tomorrow. It starts at 1 o'clock with a message to political leaders, step it up to curb global warming. This will be on the summer stage of Lapham Peak State Park on County Highway C in Delafield, and this will be just one of many events across the country scheduled. This is an interesting day. Tomorrow is 1 year before the 2008 elections. They're going to call on national leaders to end construction on new coal plants, to reduce carbon emissions 80% by 2050, and to create 5 million new green jobs. And Ed Garvey is going to be one of the speakers. So will George Stone. They are our guests this hour. Oh, let me give you the email, too. It's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, Charles Grodin will be joining us. His latest offering is a book, If I Only Knew Then, Learning from Our Mistakes. And it's interviews with all kinds of people, Alan Alda, Mikhail Baryshnikov, Carol Burnett, Walter Cronkite, Governor Mario Cuomo, Peter Falk, Art Garfunkel, Shirley MacLaine, Rosie O'Donnell, and many others. So that's coming up the second hour of our show. All right. Here's the email address, too, talk@WPR.org, if you want to get in on this conversation on global warming, talk@WPR.org. Our next caller is Dick from New Berlin. Hi, Dick.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, you know, I'm gonna rag on you guys a little bit. To me, this should be called the Chicken Little Hour. you know, I'm driving a Ford Taurus in downtown Milwaukee. I'm 53 years old. I can remember when I would drive downtown Milwaukee, I'd come to a stoplight and I would close the windows because I'd be gagging. You know, think of the advances we've made, and you guys are just ragging on Americans. And
not so.
The next car I buy, I'm looking for something with higher mileage, and that's something I'm going to do as a free marketer. But you guys, the other thing that bugs the heck out of me, you talk about global warming. Remember a couple of years ago when Katrina hit, you guys were the ones that were saying, man, we're going to be seeing about five of those a year.
Don't you believe in global warming? Don't you believe there is global warming, Dick?
Actually, I believe in the last 3 years, the average temperature of the Earth has gone down a little bit.
Oh. Yeah, I think you need to look at science here, George. There are people who adhere to his point of view, but it's just not the truth, is it?
Well, certainly is not. Eight of the warmest years on record have been since 1996. We've back in 1988, when do you remember the summer of 1988 in Milwaukee? Throughout Wisconsin, it was the warmest on record. We had 34 days over 90 in Milwaukee
that.
And 6 days over 100.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that was the warmest year on record worldwide.
Hmm.
Now, 1988 isn't even in the top 10.
Hmm.
20 of the 21 warmest years on record have been since 1980. We're on track this year to come in at number 3 or number 4. And on the land, on the continents, and in the northern hemisphere, continents and ocean basins, we are the warmest year on record right now, 2007, through September of 2007. That's from the National Climatic Data Center.
You know,
these are measurements. These aren't
mm-hmm.
opinions.
Yeah,
as caller, if we do the kinds of things that we're talking about here, it's not like it's going to hurt somebody. I mean, if we clean the air and if we protect the Great Lakes and if we have a compact with respect to how to use them, and we get cars that get 50, 75, or 100 miles per gallon, it's all good.
So it's right. Right, it's good. Yeah, so, and I think it's just a minuscule number of people who have very loud voices who want to say, you guys are chicken little here. But I wonder if they play in at all to our lack of action on this or not, Ed.
Oh, I think so.
You
I
do?
Mean, because the Bush-Cheney crowd, you know, they have been denying any of this. So, you know, if you have your national leadership saying this is a myth or it's not happening, and they change the reports from NASA and others, you know, there's a message that goes out, and that says, deny it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let me pick up on what Ed said, Kathleen.
Yeah, George, sure.
Germany came up earlier. The reason Germany's leading the world in the use of photovoltaic panels is because of government incentives. Ed said it. He said it was leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And the leadership manifested itself through providing incentives for businesses and for residents to use photovoltaic. So it's been a big success, and they're using most of the world market. Now, we have had some leadership in this country. You'll turn to California. A year ago, September 27th, 2006, Governor Schwarzenegger signed the Global Warming Solutions Act,
mm-hmm.
which calls for a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions in California back to 1990 levels by 2020. Now, that's a huge order. That's going to require a reduction of 25%.
Once again,
and it also calls
leadership.
For a reduction of 80% by 2050.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. And our government, for example, California raised the emission standards for automobiles. Our federal government filed suit. The Justice Department joined the automobile industry and the oil industry in filing suit to try to prevent them from raising the emission standards. So not only have they not been taking any action in a positive way, they've been actually trying to put the brakes on this. And it's absolutely scandalous, and that we need a change in leadership. That's the main problem in this country with the global warming issue.
Jeff from Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I'm surprised I got on so quickly, but I wanted to thank you for this program, and I wanted to mention that an issue like this, which is so difficult to be succinct on, maybe is a two-hour issue instead of a one-hour issue. But very briefly, I think every day should be a national day of climate action, and also we all need to be leaders, and we need to talk together about what we're doing personally. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Well, I'm glad that he made the comment, because I think we do have to do it, and we have to remind our legislators that we care about this issue more than we care about some of the things that have been taking up the time of the legislature in the past 6 months.
That's right. And, you know, that's what the Step It Up, getting back to the focus, tomorrow's rally at Lapin Peak State Park. The Step It Up program, people need to take action in two ways. They need to reduce their personal energy and environmental footprint, do whatever they can to conserve energy. But more than that, they need to activate the groups to which they belong, starting with the family, their churches, their community groups, their places of employment. But the second major prong has to be political activism. We've got to get our representatives. This is a representative form of government. We have to get our representatives at every level, municipal, county, state, national, and in participation in international efforts. At every level, we have to become politically active and let our representatives know we want action on this and we want it now. So that's a very important component in addition to the personal lifestyle.
Pat from Oconomowoc, hi.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
I was wondering what effect, if any, do you think converting coal to oil like they did in World War II in Germany would have, because 30 years ago, they said when oil reached $40 a barrel, it would be economically viable to convert coal to oil. And if this technology exists and if they did use that, what effect would that be on the environment? Do you think it would be good or bad? Would it, because we would be less dependent on foreign oil, and would that increase the length of time we'd be using fossil fuels, or what do you think about that?
Well, that's still fossil fuel, and still putting fossil carbon dioxide and increasing the greenhouse gas content of the atmosphere. So in that sense, it's not a good idea. We need to move away from fossil fuels. That's the great challenge. I call this the challenge of the century, the third energy revolution. The first one was the harnessing of fire. The second energy revolution was the utilization of fossil fuels that fueled the industrial revolution right up till now. And as Jeremy Rifkin says, the global warming is the bill come due for the Industrial Revolution.
Mm. Yeah, there was some good news yesterday, Kathleen.
Fuel.
Yeah. Senate Bill 81, sponsored by Senator Mark Miller, passed in a 3-2 vote, and that would put reduce the greenhouse gas emission standards to the 1990 levels in Wisconsin.
That's
so
good.
You know, finally we have somebody taking the lead. Two senators voted against it, however, so it'll probably be a problem.
Yeah. How big a deal is this day going to be tomorrow, Ed, this National Day of Climate Action? Are you anticipating just hundreds of thousands of people, or is it a movement that's still in its infancy stage?
Well, I think it's just getting started. I mean, what I find are people saying, well, what can I do? I mean, I think people feel somewhat helpless when they see things happening and they're not sure what to do. So Bill McKibben took the step here, and I think, nice, you know, the step it up, to say we have to push and get this movement started. I'm hoping that at BobFest next year we'll have McKibben speak and get others to focus on this issue. So I don't know. My view is you just fight every day, and eventually it starts to catch on because we happen to be right.
Yeah, you should invite Al Gore for next year.
Well, we can't get through to him.
Somebody
maybe
could.
We will.
You must know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody.
I do. Somebody.
I'm sure you
I
do.
Know.
Ed. Yeah, right. And we do want to let you know, some of you are listening in other areas. If you go to the StepItUp2007.org website, you can get a list of where rallies are taking place elsewhere in Wisconsin, and also where they're taking place in Illinois and various places. There are rallies in Stevens Point, in Ripon, Madison, Racine, Waukesha, Fort Atkinson, Milwaukee, and, of course, a major rally in Delafield tomorrow at the Lapham Peak State Park on County Highway C. It runs from 1 o'clock until, well, it'll run for a while, 1 to 3, and you're invited to that as well. All right, let's go next to Mike from Seneca. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I'll be as brief as possible. This is really important and it will fit in with your discussion. One gentleman, I'd like to know his name because I'd like to call him, but I was a dealer on photovoltaic, wind power, and so forth. These products have been, some of these products have been developed since the 1920s when, before the coal plants really got going, and wind power is not anything new. These products are on the market now. They really don't need to be new developments, and I have a catalog at least 3/8 of an inch thick with all this stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem being that same old human nature and habit, the attitude has to be changed, and there has to be an impetus set by the government as leadership. Jimmy Carter had a program, I believe he was president then. He would issue substantial tax credits for anyone that went either wind or photovoltaic. It's not a tinker toy project or a home user thing. You have to have a dealer install it, and it has to be maintained, and it is expensive. It's
all
a
right.
long-term investment.
Thanks, Mike, for the call. We are running short on time.
George? We need incentives. Could I make one quick comment?
Of course.
Go to the Focus on Energy webpage. Now, Focus on Energy is supported by a surcharge on everybody's utility bill. It's a great organization. Wisconsin Energy Conservation Corporation runs it, WEC. They have web page after web page on every kind of renewable energy, who the dealers are around the state and in your area. Go to Focus on Energy. You'll find all the information you need. What we need is incentives so that these existing technologies become more economically feasible for businesses and for residents.
Then go to the Sierra Club and Clean Wisconsin for the rest.
Okay.
Okay, and then go to the rally tomorrow, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Let's go to Cynthia for our final call from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I'm just calling to thank the speakers, but also to remind everyone to honor those who already have taken some leadership steps in reducing their carbon footprint, and that's what we're trying to do in Fort Atkinson through the Atkinson Diet. We're trying to really honor the city as well as businesses like Verlo Mattress, Ace Hardware, who are trying to encourage citizens to purchase LED lights and again, reduce their carbon footprint.
Good.
Good, good. Hey, Kathleen, let's do this again before the January 31st Focus the Nation Nationwide Action Day.
You're on. We'll do it. Thank you both so much
thank
for being
you,
with us. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
And we thank Ed Garvey. Ed will be one of the speakers tomorrow, attorney with Garvey McNeil and McGilvery in Madison, frequent guest on Joy's show on Friday morning, the Week in Review. He's a progressive guy who played a role in supporting the development of the Wisconsin Public Intervenors Office as an environmental watchdog. And if you don't read his blogs, you should. They're fun and interesting. On FightingBob.com, we also would like to thank George Stone, natural sciences instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College, who teaches classes on climate change fundamentals and weather fundamentals. And if you want more information about tomorrow's rally, again, please go to Step It Up, stepitup2007.org. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.